Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
As many of us read through the Sunday newspapers, evaluated the news flow over the last few days, VBS has been front and center of a focus in terms of the financial malfeasance, fraud, corruption and lack of governance that took place at the entity. As we've heard and seen, the chairperson, Chifua Matodzi, has essentially looking to comply with the law and will be serving at least 15 years imprisonment, which is a much lower reduction in terms of accounts that he actually needed to stand for. Beyond that, we also saw a plethora of views and accusations that were made in terms of the affidavit that had leaked and sharing a lot more findings into the complexity of the case, but also the individuals who were involved, including the former CEO, Mr. Philip Trotter, who is essentially being released on a suspended sentence now, having served an initial 3 years in prison. So why do I bring up these particular examples? Well, we're not going to discuss the particular case, but we're going to discuss the learnings as to how it is that these individuals who are chartered accountants, great business leaders, advocates, directors of businesses who had a fiduciary duty to prioritize good corporate governance actually fell through. And what lessons we need to learn in terms of making sure that we can hold delinquent directors accountable, and where this plays a critical role in ensuring ethical leadership in South Africa. To help us unpack this further is the Executive for Governance and Corporate Services at the Institute for Directors in South Africa. We're joined by Vikeshni Vandia, who joins us now to give us some insight. Such a pleasure to have you with us, and welcome to the show.
Good evening. Thank you for having me.
I can imagine that as we look at many of the companies in South Africa that have recently been highlighted to have flouted governance rules and regulations, we really have a lot of lessons to learn in terms of corporate governance and understanding its importance, right, within the corporate structures of the world. And maybe let's just start there, Vikeshni, just in terms of how these cases like VBS and many others we've mentioned do put a spotlight on the importance of good corporate governance in the country.
Well, I think these cases, and if we look at the Zondo Commission report, you know, it highlights the importance of directors understanding their fiduciary duties and that they're there to act in the best interests of the company. I think that's one of the key points that we need to drive, having the right individuals, not only on the board, but also having proper governance frameworks in place. It's all great and well to have all the policies and frameworks in place, but what's important is it actually being applied and followed? And I think in some of those cases where we found financial misconduct and acting, you know, outside of your authority, et cetera, there were frameworks in place and there were policies in place, but these were actually not followed. Mm-hmm. But I think what for our conversation today is really about director delinquency and why it's so important that we really hold directors accountable, especially where there is evidence of such gross negligence and misconduct. Because if we don't, these same individuals then remain or continue to serve on other boards and continue to cause the same disarray, I think, elsewhere.
100%. And you raise a valid point. Maybe let's start by understanding what makes a director delinquent.
So the Companies Act under Section 162 lists a number of grounds on which a director can be declared delinquent. Now, this is a closed list, which means that in order to be declared delinquent, you have to be found in terms of one of these grounds. So some of these grounds include, and there's a few of them, I'm just going to mention a few, is if a director, for example, consented to serve as a director while ineligible or disqualified, if they already contravened a probation order, if there was gross abuse of the position of a director, if there was improper use of their position for an added advantage, so for example, taking advantage of information learned, mm-hmm. If they acted in a manner that amounted to gross negligence, willful misconduct, and a breach of trust in relation to their performance as a director, their functions and duties to the company, acted without the necessary authority, fraudulent conduct, and so on. What's, I think, important to note that in order to be successful on an application, it has to be serious misconduct, mm. Which means that there needs to be either dishonesty willful misconduct or some gross negligence that occurred. So ordinary negligence, poor business decision-making, or a misguided director relying on incorrect, you know, professional advice won't be enough to bring about an application or get a director actually declared delinquent.
And I'm assuming this would need to be tested. There'd need to be evidence. It would need to be verified. And a thorough investigation would typically have to take place before this is declared, right?
Yes. So we've actually released a paper on director delinquency to actually help both stakeholders and the companies and directors to understand, you know, what it takes and why it's important to undergo this process. Mm-hmm. So the paper does give an annexure that outlines the process. It is simply, as you said, you need to investigate, gather your evidence, consult with the attorney, make sure the evidence that you have actually falls within one of these grounds to bring an application. And if it's not an application of delinquency, it could be other, there could be other remedies available, you know, to the company. And then you'd follow a normal court process. What's, I think, nice about a director delinquency application is you can consider applying for a special allocation or a commercial court allocation that may accelerate the court proceedings. Ah. And then, of course, if you get the declaration order, you need to inform the CIPC because they need to put that on their disqualified persons register.
I was keen just to understand what the difference is between the different two court processes and the outcomes that they might achieve.
So I'm not the best person for that. It's quite a legal nature, sure. But it's in our paper. So my understanding is the commercial court, you have to apply specifically to go there under commercial reason, but I do stand corrected.
Got you. And I'm glad that you're helping us understand this, because I'm aware that there's areas of speciality here in terms of the law and realms in that function. But for the rest of us who either work for organizations, we happen to be key stakeholders as well, and we observe what's happening in the news headlines, we, you know, hearing of some of the moves and the shifts of leaders resigning, leaders being arrested, others being prosecuted. But how do we need to fully understand the process of actually declaring a director delinquent? You talked us through the list, but have we actually found that a large number of directors who have served at institutions that have proven to have flouted governance rules have actually been declared delinquent?
So they have actually been a few cases, the biggest case being the Dudumieni case. I think mm-hmm. that was a big one that was a few years ago. What's interesting about that case is that it actually extended the legal standing to include a person acting in the public interest. So who can bring an application is the company itself, your shareholders, a fellow director, company secretary, a registered trade union, the CIPC, or the takeover regulation panel. But what this case specifically added was OUTA, the organization undoing tax, was also qualified to bring an application on the basis that they were acting in the public interest. So in this case, you know, Dudumieni there was found delinquent for a lifetime declaration, which is quite key. But there have been some other cases as well, which is also listed in our paper that show some examples as well. I don't know if you want me to list some of them.
Sure, go ahead. I think it would be more practical and tangible for us as listeners.
So there's Kukama versus Lobelo was one example in 2012. We've also got the CIPC, which was against Cresswell and others in 2017. So there is a few of them listed there that I think those who would want to get more of the information are welcome to get the paper off our website. It's freely available to the public, as it is in the public interest to actually be aware of these things.
Mm. And I think there's a big lesson here for many of us who perhaps have ambitions of being directors or are directors of businesses and institutions, to actually understand the role, function and importance of whether it's non-executive directors or executive directors of institutions, and fundamentally the compass perhaps that they serve as in offering direction to institutions in terms of governance. Your takeaways or closing remarks on this in terms of the individual and personal responsibility that we need to know?
So I think that's a very important note. You know, currently the way our law stands is anyone can serve as a director. There's no minimum criteria or requirements in order for an individual to serve. The Companies Act only provides us with certain disqualification criteria. So this means we have a huge gap currently in terms of, you know, what are the minimum criteria, your qualification, your skills, your requirements. And what we've seen from the cases that you mentioned is that there's a clear lack of governance knowledge and understanding of director fiduciary duties by those appointed on boards. So I think it's both important, I think, private and public sector for us to really enforce both in our regulatory frameworks or requirements, even in your board charters, etc. What are the minimum criteria for your director appointments? Making sure there's proper due diligence as well before nominating and appointing individuals, and ensuring individuals have the requisite skills, knowledge, and experience. And when we say experience, it's you know, you can be a good attorney or accountant, but it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be a good director. Mm-hmm. You need to understand what your fiduciary duties are and what it means to act in that position. Because even if you're appointed by a minister or shareholder, your duty is to act in the best interest of the company at the end of the day.
100%.
The IADSA has been advocating for the professionalism of directors for quite some time. We do believe directorship should be seen as a profession like any other. So there should be, you know, defined skills, knowledge and experience sets that people should be looking for. So I would really urge companies, when looking at your nominated candidates, you know, besides doing your proper due diligence checks on background verifying qualifications, is to also promote having directors who have a director qualification, who's, you know, part of a professional body like the IADSA. You can even check if they're a member of ours, because if they are, then they're obliged or bound by our member code of conduct, which is also quite important. So I think those are the things people need to take away, and that's what we've been advocating. We also recommended that in the recent Companies Act Amendment Bill, when it was out for comments, we did recommend that it be considered that the Act actually strengthens those requirements on the competence that's required for directors, so that there's actually a license to operate. 100%. I think if we can have that in place, it will also help remove, you know, director misc or those that are misconducting much easier than having to go through a court process if you've got an ability to remove a license to operate, you know, similar to your chartered directors.
100%.
Sorry, chartered accountants.
Yes, mm-hmm. Chartered accountants and auditors, if I'm not mistaken, and a few other regulatory bodies as well. Such a pleasure speaking to you, Vikeshni. Really appreciate the clarity you've provided and a heightened level of awareness that we also need to keep in mind. Thank you. That's Vikeshni Vandia, who is Executive for Governance and Corporate Services at the Institute of Directors in South Africa.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.